So I use like sports as an outlet to release my anger, release my negative energy. So it's not necessarily always the best thing to do because it has a lot of like punishment based feeling behind it. So with time I learned that and I shifted my perspective, but back in the day that's where it was coming from.
This is The Metal Set.
Hi, this is Dawn, an ultra cyclist and sports PR specialist.
And I'm Afshan, an endurance athlete and journalist.
And we're on a quest to bring you stories of tenacity, courage, and metal.
From athletes in the Middle East and beyond.
Amna Al-Haddad had never, even in her wildest dreams, considered being in the spotlight when she decided to become a weightlifter in her 20s, and then going on to become a recognized mental health advocate and speaker after leaving competitive sport. And it was a walk in the park that changed her life trajectory.
The 32-year-old Emirati sports personality has many firsts and honors to her name. First Arab and GCC national to compete in the Reebok CrossFit Asia Regionals in Korea in 2012. The first Arab and GCC woman to become a competitive covered weightlifter and first Emirati to compete in the 10th International Women's Weightlifting Grand Prix in 2013. And then playing a crucial part in the 7-member female UAE national weightlifting team that competed to earn a quota for the Rio Olympics in 2016.
But none of her accolades as an elite athlete define her, but rather what she has managed to achieve in the mental health realm through her platform is what has brought more meaning to her life.
Amna, who may be our only guest immortalized in wax at Madame Tussauds Dubai, and also the only female athlete in the museum, might we add, is a prolific speaker on mental health and self-care, gender balance, social impact of sports, and female sports in the UAE. All tied into her own experience and lessons, battling with mental health issues and competing in a predominantly male-dominated sport in the Middle East.
She tells us about how she got drawn into the sport of weightlifting, the lack of support and sponsorship for women, why she left it when it stopped bringing joy, and how she found fulfillment in creating change by sharing her journey with others.
This resonated with us, and hope it does with you too.
Welcome, Amna. We're super excited to have you here today. I heard you speak a little while ago, and your story really resonated with me, especially your mental health advocacy. And I know it's going to resonate with our listeners as well. One of the first things I guess I wanted to talk about is that you're probably going to be the first, and I suspect the only person that we have on our podcast who has a Madame Tussauds wax figure. I think we might be peaking too early with this podcast, Afshan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did they call you? Did they tell you? I mean, were you part of the design process? What was it like?
First of all, thank you so much for having me today for the podcast. I'm very excited to be here and share my journey and story. So that was an interesting situation. Basically, they reached out to me and saying that they would like to have a wax figure of me. So of course, I had to like give my approvals, and there was like a good 4 to 5 hours like fitting of some sort where I had to like pose and decide like what kind of facial looks I wanted to have. And now you see my wax figure, Madame Tussauds, and it looks very, very, very real. And it's so scary, but amazing at the same time.
Amazing. I noticed you're on social media, you put on Instagram, like the facials in particular. I was going to ask about that. So that you actually modeled for that before.
Yes, I did. So I had to like hold the pose for quite a bit. And then they would put these like white dots around your face to kind of get the details of your face and things like that. And they really managed to get a lot of little details. Like I have this kind of scar on my nose that's there as well.
Wow.
You know, the little wrinkles in my chin, they had that there too. And even like just the intensity in my eyes was there. And it's like amazing just to kind of see it. So whenever I go there and I see it, I feel like this strange feeling of like, oh, I'm seeing myself, but in a different way. So it's an honor, honestly, to have a wax figure. I think it's an important thing because like I actually am the only female athlete in the room.
Amazing.
And I think, you know, there's needs to be more women in like, you know, these kind of platforms.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, I mean, you know, sometimes you think about like wax figures and things that might be a bit like entertainment, blah blah blah, but it also showcases that, you know, the power of our stories, the power of individuals, and the power of achievement in sports for women. And that we, even though like I'm not like the best athlete in the world, like by all means I'm not, you know, but my story
created such an impact that, you know, a global platform realized that. Right. And I think that is really important for people to, if you have a specific journey you want to pursue or a sport, like, just go for it. You never know where it will take you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, representation is so important.
It matters. Yeah, it's very, very important. So along with Madame, I'm going to say it correctly, Tussauds. I'm saying Tussauds, but it's Tussauds. You recently won an award at the Fast Company Middle East Awards. Amazing. You've contributed to a children's book. I just want to ask you, you know, when you got started, looking back, I think it was 10 years ago, maybe you started this journey.
Yeah.
Could you have ever imagined this would be your trajectory?
Absolutely not. I had zero idea, honestly. When I started my journey, it was mostly about, like, pursuing something for myself, pursuing something for my mental health, pursuing something because I wanted to just see where I could go with it. As an athlete, like, I had no idea even what training for the Olympics meant. I just kind of said, oh, I'm going to train for the Olympics. Like, with no idea or with no clear intention behind my sports career. So that was not my main goal. It was just like going and trying and seeing where I can go. And I think sometimes when we do things from a place of, you know, good heart or good intention, it creates like a impact of its own. And that is something we cannot control. We think we can control it, but like once you start taking actions towards certain things, you will not only impact yourself, you're going to impact the world around you. So whenever you do anything in life, I always say do it with good intentions. Mm-hmm. And it's okay, like, because we want to, you know, feel good about them, blah, blah, blah. All that is good, as fine as well. But like, don't do it with a place of healing, a place of love. Let that be the intention. And that will carry on in its own way, in a beautiful way, I believe.
Perfect. I mean, and just, you know, taking that forward, you did mention, though, that you were doing it for your, you know, mental health. Like, how did you realize that that is what you wanted to do? Like, that would take you out of your mental health and your depressive state that you were in. Mm. When did you realize that? What was the first step that you took? Mm. And, you know, take us through that entire journey, because it's amazing what you've achieved.
So my journey started when I was about like 19 years old. I was dealing with severe depression and anxiety, and I was on medication. And I remember those medication that I was on made me feel like a vegetable. So they're the kind of that were very strong, that, you know, you would do something to hurt yourself, for example. Mm-hmm. So I felt really like kind of dead inside, but I was alive, and I did not like that feeling. And I wanted to change that. One day I was so angry at myself, and I hated myself. So I did not like start this from a place of like, oh, I want to feel good, I want to go and feel bad. That was not how I felt. I was so angry. I was so like self-loathing, and I had a lot of negative feelings. And then I just decided to go for a walk. Like, I was so, like, just wanted to get out of the house. So I went to a park next to our house, and I kind of took a couple of rounds in there. And then I started to sweat a lot. I started to feel like my negative feelings were really leaving my body. Like, oh, okay, this starts to feel good. Like, I was walking with anger, with negative thoughts in my brain, you know? But sometimes when we stay in our place, our emotions stay inside of us. Mm-hmm. But once we start moving, and I truly believe there is healing in movement, start to release a lot of those things and allow for new energy to come in. So that's what I did. And I didn't realize that until later on. So I'm speaking to you now, not as Amna, the one who started that journey, but as Amna, the who started realizing and process, took time to process my journey, like, and understood, what I did was, you know, I took a decision. I took action with my decision, because we can decide and not take action. So I decided, I took action, and I did something with it, and then I continued on that path. So every single day I was taking a decision, and I was taking action. So that led me to learn more about, like, going to the gym. I wanted to lose a bit of fat as well. So I started doing some bodybuilding, started lifting some weights. And then I was at a female gym. I was not, like, going to mixed gyms at the time. It was back in 2009-10, I think. Right. And it was very unheard of as an Emirati woman to go to mixed gyms, let alone Emirati woman lifting weights. So I decided to, you know, kind of venture out eventually, because the female gyms we were at did not have heavier weights. So I lifted.
Of course they didn't.
Yeah. So I pretty much lifted everything that was there, and I'm like, okay, now what?
You're looking at the equipment. Like, can I lift the equipment off the floor?
Only 4 kg dumbbells or 2 kg dumbbells, and that's it.
Exactly.
Right? That's the amount of weight that women can lift.
Exactly.
They're childbearing. They can only lift 2 kgs.
Right. Right.
I always say women are the ultimate endurance athletes. There's science to back that up, by the way. Yeah. Like, mothers, particularly.
I believe that. And so I just, like, had enough of that, like, being restricted because of, like, you know, the equipment. So I went to a mixed gym, And I started to learn a bit more about like Olympic weightlifting, and I got then into CrossFit. And like the first time I went to like a CrossFit gym, in my first training session, I used to like lift around 60 kilos. And I remember in my first session, I went from 60 to 75 kilos, just like that, because I'm strong enough to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had the proper like coach who understood like, okay, Amna, your body's strong enough for more. So I got addicted to that feeling. Like, right. I wanted to do more. I wanted to like see where I can go with it. And at the time I was working as a journalist as well. So I wasn't a full-time journalist while I was started to kind of get into CrossFit. Mm-hmm. And that was in 2011-ish.
Right.
Then I realized that, you know what, I have a competitive spirit in me. So I started taking part of local events in the UAE. Mm-hmm. They were like fitness kind of competitions. They were not CrossFit exactly. Some of them were CrossFit-like. And it was really interesting because I was the only woman running around doing things, and I was in my hijab at that time. So it was very awkward for people to kind of like see that. They're not understanding, who is this girl? What is she doing? You mm-hmm. know? And for me, I just wanted to like kind of release a lot of emotions, a lot of anger. So I used like sports as an outlet to release my anger, release my negative energy. So it's not necessarily always the best thing to do because it has a lot of like punishment based kind of feeling behind it. So with time I learned that and I shifted my perspective, but back in the day that's where it was coming from. And it's all right. I think it's fine. Like, that's how you grow. That's how you, you know.
Yeah, I mean, channeling your energy somewhere. It's positive, you know.
Exactly, exactly. So from there on, I just started to, like, get into CrossFit. And then I made a goal to want to compete full-time in it. And that's when I decided, I said, I'm going to train for the CrossFit, for the Asia Regionals. There was an open stage, which is like a few weeks long. And then through that, you either qualify or you don't. And we qualified as a team. And I was the first Arab and GCC national to actually qualify for the Asia Regionals, which took place in Korea in 2012.
Amazing. When I heard you speak before, I do remember you saying something about moving from a fitness culture to a sporting culture. Mm-hmm. Talk us through that, what you meant by that, and why that's important for people.
Yeah. So a fitness culture is very different than a sports culture in the sense that when you're into the fitness world, it's about being active, taking part of maybe even events, even if you can compete. But your lifestyle is completely different when you're an athlete. You have to think about so many different things. You have to think about your funding, your programming, your loading, your competitions, which ones you're taking part of, which one you don't take part of. Mm-hmm. Because it's not about like doing every event, you know? And it's about like how you manage your stress, how you manage your mental health, how you manage your training program, your social life around that. And it's the determination between, you know what, pushing yourself through a bad training session versus, mm-hmm. you know, when you're in the fitness industry, it's fine. Like, you have a bad day, whatever. You can just, like, put it to sleep and let it go and whatever. But if you're an athlete, you don't have a lot of room to, you know, like, not mess up, but, like, you don't have room to kind of get off the program. But then things like injuries happen and things like that. So the sports culture, to really develop the sports culture in the Middle East, it's going to take us years. You know, you cannot expect somebody to get a gold medal. Everyone's like, when I was starting for the Olympics, they're expecting to get a gold medal. I'm like, based on what? I'm not getting funded. I don't have the right coaching. There's not right facilities.
Right.
I don't have the right, you
there's
know.
There's no infrastructure in place
you absolutely.
To...
And infrastructure doesn't mean just like gyms. Because you can have a gym.
Yeah.
But it's about the environment. Yeah. It's about having the physiotherapy, having, you know, a sports psychologist.
Yeah.
Sponsors.
There's a lot more that is needed, you know, and especially funding. It's a very important aspect of it. I cannot just like train and not be able to fly to my competition. What's the point?
Yeah.
And even training, you got to pay the coaches. You got to, you know, get the right meals, the physiotherapy, all of that has a cost. So on what basis were people expecting me to get a gold medal in the Olympics and even be a great athlete at the Olympics? I mean, come on, have some realistic expectation. There's progress, you know, there are milestones, there's benchmarks you need to reach before you can expect such results.
Yeah.
And they want everything like kind of the opposite way. They want the success, then they will support you.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
Exactly.
You gotta support, and then you're gonna be part of that successful journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And you started CrossFit when you were a journalist, and that's how we met, you know. We've been co-workers at some point in our careers. But you were slowly also kind of transforming into this athlete in CrossFit. Did you have to decide between being a pro elite athlete and your job at some point?
Yes, I did. I had to definitely decide. I realized that, you know, with my journalism career, as much as I loved it and I love writing, journalism itself was not my true passion for me. I like telling stories. I like writing. And I found the kind of work I was doing a bit more on the robotic side, and I did not like that. And I knew that with sports, it's kind of now or never. Mm-hmm. Writing, I can come back to it anytime. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I cannot gain back my youth.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what, we have this idea, yes, you can start anything at any age, and that is very true. You can. I started sports very late, but still with age, there are certain setbacks. There are certain challenges you have to deal with. You know, your joints don't work as well. They're not as, there's not as much fluidity in them as much as before. Your mobility changes, your recovery changes. So all of those things are taken into consideration. So I knew that it was now or never. Mm-hmm. So I had to make a choice between whether I continue doing that kind of both together, or should I just, you know, quit my job and pursue sports full time? And that's what I did. And that's when I knew I am going to be a pro athlete, elite athlete, training for something bigger than just like being taking part of fitness events.
Do you remember that day? I guess the last day of work, or the day you made the decision to do that? What
was
that
like? It was in June. I remember it was in June.
So it's just
June 2012.
I remember you.
So 10 years, last month. Yeah.
I remember you talking about it a lot. Like, you know, so I knew that there was something there. I think you were in a position where you were still wondering maybe whether that would be the right decision. And like you said, you know, previously that there are things that are missing and lacking, especially in kind of supporting women in sports, right? Mm-hmm. So that decision must have been something that you would have to weigh in terms of, oh, you know, would it be lucrative to be an elite athlete, you know, as a woman, or should I just keep my day job, you know? So I'm pretty sure. But I do remember you talking about it quite a lot.
Yeah, it was a hard choice, you know. When I quit my job, I had no plan B. Mm-hmm. There was no idea where I'm going to get my, you know, and my money from, where I'm going to, you know, get support from. And there is one person actually I want to thank because he supported me as an individual. His name is Sultan Al-Dermaki. And he is the one who supported me and my team to go and compete in Korea. So for me, that was a big, you know, sense of support that I received. And that, you know, one time where I felt like, okay, somebody really cared about seeing me succeed. And without him doing that, I wouldn't have been able to go and compete and make history for the country, mm-hmm. you know. And that is something that people don't realize, you know, when you're supporting a woman, you're also supporting a generation and the country that woman is from. It's not about, it's not just about supporting the woman to go and compete or, you know, you're supporting a whole, you know, generation, the community.
All the little girls looking at you.
Exactly.
Saying, maybe I can do that.
And you're creating an environment where there is hope and there is, you know, a sense of success, a sense of achievement, a sense of community, a sense of a time where people can come together and like do something great and just kind of create peace.
Mm-hmm. So was that your first international competition?
Yes.
In the Reebok CrossFit Asia Regionals in South Seoul. How long after you kind of said, I'm done with journalism, how long a period was it between then and...
I competed, I think it was in May 2012, and a month later I quit my job.
Oh, wow. So you competed before. So that was kind of a catalyst, I guess, really.
Yeah. It showed me that there is much more I can do. Mm-hmm. And it showed me that actually when I competed in CrossFit Asia Regionals, I realized I was the only like Arab woman there. Mm-hmm. And it was very strange for me. And I was like, everybody was looking at me like different because I looked different. And to see the kind of environment where everybody was supportive and encouraging, it felt really nice. And mm-hmm. I wanted to be part of that. And we did not have that growing up here in the Middle East, in the UAE. We did not have like sport facilities or sport activities where we like work together as a team. Mm-hmm. Everything is done either like, oh, do jumping jacks in your PE class and things like that.
Wasn't the competitive sports scene.
No, and not even like a friendly anything. Like there was no like basketball games. There was no like, you know, swimming teams. There was nothing that where we could just kind of have a social aspect of sports.
Like a community, create a sports community.
Exactly. So that's when actually, even after I did compete in CrossFit, I realized CrossFit is not a sport for me. Mm. That's when I came back. I'm like, you know what? Because I wanted to do Olympic weightlifting even before CrossFit, mm-hmm. but I had no idea what Olympic weightlifting meant.
How did you learn about all this? Was it like Googling or just asking questions, or what? Where were you getting all this info from? Because it's gone, you know, from walking around your neighborhood park, and then you're like, and then I was doing Olympic weightlifting. I'm like, how? Yeah. Like, this is amazing.
It was Googling, a lot of Googling. And because I'm a journalist, by nature, so there was a lot of research from my end to learn more about different things. Yeah. And I saw that CrossFit included Olympic weightlifting element to it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, CrossFit does not teach, at least back in the day, the proper technique of Olympic weightlifting. Mm-hmm. So I was derailed quite a bit learning Olympic weightlifting through CrossFit.
Right.
Because it's not the proper way. So I learned a lot of the wrong techniques. So I decided to like focus on Olympic weightlifting and do my best to learn as much as possible on how to lift properly so I can actually progress in the sport. And that's when I also decided, you know, I want to stop competing in CrossFit and I want to focus on Olympic weightlifting. And that was in October 2012. I made the decision that I don't want to do CrossFit anymore. I'm going to focus on Olympic weightlifting. 5 to 6 months later, I was at the Arnold Sport Festival competing in my first Olympic weightlifting event.
What was that like? What was going through your head walking into that competition?
Woo! It was tough, man. It was my first event where I competed internationally, like aside from CrossFit, that was an individual sport. So in CrossFit, it was a team event. No, it's not an individual event. So basically, the way I describe Olympic weightlifting is like you're giving a speech naked in front of people. That is what Olympic weightlifting feels like. Really. Yeah. Really. You're, you're there on stage
by yourself
and you on the barbell and people are watching you and it's silent.
Yeah.
So it is awkward, you know?
So and aren't you imagining everyone in their underwear then?
I don't imagine anyone. I just see a black wall of like that's all I see right now. And that was actually like one of the challenging aspects of it because it was my first time ever experiencing like properly competing. So normally when you are in a proper Olympic weightlifting environment, you create competition days like in training. So I did not take part of that until like half into my training for my Olympic like trials. So I did not have that ability to kind of experience that before because the facilities, the environment, the understanding was not there. And like when you're Olympic weightlifting, people like should not walk in front of you. Like there is a silent respect code of like what to do and not to do when you're lifting weights, especially if you're going for a heavy lift or it's a competitive like day or whatever. So that was not understood here in the community, in the sports culture and things like that. You know, those little things, these are part of the sports culture. And I don't remember how much I lifted, honestly. It was like very lightweight back in the day. But the most important thing for me and my coach was for me to total. So to total is to basically not do DNF, which is do not finish. Yeah. So get a number, it goes on the record. So that's where you feel kind of like you've accomplished something and you have three lifts in snatch and three lifts in clean and jerk. And then they combine both as your total. And what's nice about like events like this Arnold Sport Festival is that there's no minimum to your entry. In the sense like you don't have to hit a certain minimum to be able to enter in your weight category.
Right.
So it's a bit more open to everybody. And that was really nice experience. And what I loved about going there is that a lot of the athletes were actually very supportive. Like I was an Arab woman, you know, I was in my hijab at the time and I was competing and they did not see it weird. If anything, they were really encouraging. They were very supportive. And during that event, I found a coach there who told me what I can do to even get my lifts better. So eventually I moved to the United States to train abroad.
This episode is supported by Deep Dive Dubai.
We know that our listeners love awesome adventures. And take it from us, it doesn't get more awe-inspiring than the world's deepest pool.
Measuring a record-breaking 60 meters, Deep Dive Dubai gives both scuba and free divers the ability to discover an underwater world complete with the latest in dive technology and an abandoned sunken city.
For those new to diving, like me, it's the ideal place to get started. And for those experienced to expert divers out there, it's the perfect place to hone your skills with exceptional facilities, expert staff, and state-of-the-art technology.
Since it opened in 2021, it has mesmerized visitors and continues to deliver extraordinary experiences 7 days a week. For more information and to book your experience, visit deepdivedubai.com.
You've got the odds stacked against you, right? Woman doesn't have the facilities or the infrastructure, the sponsorship to kind of pursue this dream, yet you're doing it, you're hustling, right? What was the support that you were receiving to actually hustle and move forward here with the community? Because this is traditionally, it's a male-dominated space, especially in the Middle East, right? So what was the community support here? What was the family support here? What was the employer support here? Like, what was that support for you?
That was really difficult time, honestly. I wish my story was different, but I was like, I was supported by XYZ, and I had all of, like, a backbone to lean on. That was not the reality. You know, my parents were very unhappy with my decision, obviously. I was quitting a job, a good-paying job, and, you know, to pursue something that wasn't even seen as a career path for women. So their main concern was, like, how am I going to support myself, and how, if I get injured and XYZ, and what people will say. The community, there were a few individuals who were very supportive because they are former athletes. They understand, or they were athletes as well. And some of them were like Emirati men. So that was actually very nice to receive that kind of support, like emotional support in that sense. And like, Amna, I see what you're doing. What you're doing is bigger than yourself. It is, a path that can really create change in society. Mm-hmm. But also they put a lot of expectation on me. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of burden on me that I was, you know, kind of loaded with that people did not realize. Instead of just like being an athlete, doing my own thing, it started to become not just my story, but the story of what the world wanted from me.
Right. Mm.
And that was really difficult. And obviously I quit my job because I did not feel there was the support system where I could do both at the same time. And, you know, I wanted to focus as well full time on sports and see where that could take me, because my life was wake up, eat, go train, come back, eat, take a nap, wake up, have a small snack, go train, come back, eat, sleep. That
very
was my life.
Yeah.
That was my life. And it was a very lonely life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is something we don't talk about a lot. And it affects your mental health
when you
are on the road. By the road, I mean like training, kind of on a focus on your
you
path.
You were on the road. You were going to the US and training there, right? So
yeah. And so having a support system is really one of the most maybe undervalued things that we don't realize. And if you pursue a path, like, know that you have somebody you can lean on, or an accountability partner, a friend, somebody that you can talk to. And later on, I started to kind of reach out to people a bit more myself and be like, listen, I'm going through a hard time. I need somebody to be my accountability partner. I need somebody to call and know I can talk to if I'm going through a rough time. Back in the day, you know, I was so very focused on what I wanted to do that I felt nobody would understand, nobody would, resonate with what's happening.
Yeah.
And I had friends who I stopped being friends with because they did not understand my path. They found it, like, shameful. They found it, like, it's not respectful. So it was difficult. It was very lonely. I cannot say it was, and I had support come and go a lot. So it was kind of like a bit here, a bit there. Whether it was financial, whether it was like emotional support, whether it was like coaching support, because I actually coached myself for about a year and a half as well.
Wow.
So I had to get programming from a coach from abroad because I did not find the coaches who understood how to train somebody for Olympic weightlifting who started sport at a late age. So I started when I was 22.
Mm.
You don't start Olympic weightlifting at 22. You start like with gymnastics at 3.
Yeah.
And then at like 6, you do a bit of like endurance and things like that. And then like mobility and whatever. And then at 9, they start teaching you like technical things.
Yeah.
You know, and then they, as you get into like your teen years, they start kind of working with more weights and adjust as you're growing.
So you're playing catch up, really.
Yeah. So I had to kind of put like 12 years of training in like 4.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I think, what made my journey stand out a lot, is that how did she do this from a walk to training for the Olympics in 4 years?
Well, talking about, I guess, going from that walk as well, you know, when you started to, I didn't make this up, but I love it. Mood follows movement, right? Mm-hmm. It helps me, and I know it helps you as well.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you're starting walking, you're feeling better. And then when you enter into the competitive sports space, there's a whole new element of stress.
Yeah.
You know, and you talked about your mental health. How did you manage that?
I had relapses. Yeah. I had relapses. There's no, even if you, like, let's say you're somebody who has depression for most of your life, you know, it kind of comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
And you just learn how to manage it better with time.
100%.
And you just have to learn how to kind of, you know, have learned new tools. Sometimes your old tools don't work anymore. Mm-hmm. They get dusty, rusty. So you gotta figure out how to like polish them, or like get something else to like a new tool to kind of deal with it. And when you're an athlete, obviously you have that pressure on yourself of wanting to like get that weight or get that like number or get that level of in your sport. And I would say the reason why I had a lot of my relapses because I did not have the support I needed.
Right.
So it was not so much about the tough training, because even when you're training, you can depress your nervous system.
Mm.
You can get depressed as a result of overtraining.
Yeah.
And this is something that you only can learn with time, with your coach. And that's how you, like, this is where, like, you know, sport culture needs, especially for women, it's very different.
Yeah.
And, like, you have to work with your cycle and things like that. Like, I know, like, 10 days out before my cycle, my back is weak as hell.
Yeah.
And there's no way I can, like, push beyond a certain number or a point because I know I'm going to get injured. There's even studies that your gravity, when you have your, like, period, you're a bit more forward.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm lifting weights, just, like, before my period, I can always feel my lose a lot of lifts on the front instead of the back.
Yeah.
So a lot of those things you have to learn when you're an athlete. You have to understand how to work around those things.
And you often have to learn them yourself as a woman. You know, like, I've had coaches where I've asked questions before and they, to like male coaches, they turn bright red. Like,
yeah, which is very strange. Yeah. Because, you know, how are you going to coach unless you kind of know anatomically where a woman is, you know, menstrually where a woman is, hormonally where a woman is. Like, you can't be a good coach if you just begin to ignore,
you cannot.
What is basic biology?
I think some coaches think, like, we're just like men. No, yeah. We're not.
We're strong, we can do it, we can handle it, but, you know, you still have to work with each person individually, no matter
what.
Yes, exactly. It's not a man-woman thing. It's just everyone's different.
Yeah. So, like, you, like, figure out, like, if I'm, like, going through, like, a really bad phase, like, I could maybe do some very light lifting. I can do some walking. I can do some technical things, some accessory work. But I cannot do, for example, clean and jerks and snatches.
Yeah.
Because I know I'm going to hurt myself, you know. So it was a challenging time. But I remember, this goes back to maybe when I had, like, my major relapse. It was not far from the Olympic trials. And I had a major injury at the same time. So I had a disc. And that was in, like, November of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
That was around 6 months before the qualifiers. And on that period, I was going through severe depression. I started taking medication again. And I told myself I need the medication if I'm going to continue, like, to go to Olympic trials.
Mm-hmm.
And this is for me the first time I actually mentioned this publicly. So I was taking medication and I started to feel better. It mm-hmm. helped me. But it also opened up my appetite. It made me want to eat some more food. So I gained a bit of weight. And obviously that affects your training, affects your, strength levels and things like that. So when I kind of reached that, it was in December, I remember, and my coach reached out to me, my UAE national coach, who was a new coach in the UAE. He was training here about maybe, I think, a year before, like, just after I left, he came. And he told me, like, Amna, you're going to be part of the national team going to compete at the Olympic trials. And I remember looking at my phone. I remember the moment I was like, we were talking through, like, in a Facebook chat. And I was, like, in this state of, like, what do I do now? Like, at that time, I was barely training. I had to stop training completely for a while because my back was not in a good state. My mind was not in a good state. And anything I do would have put me at risk, further risk. So I had to kind of, like, step back and put myself first. So then I told myself, you know what, Amna, you've given up so much. You've left your home. You are in the U.S. here, living by yourself. You walked away from a good job. You left your family, your comfort zone. You sacrificed so much. You dealt with so many, like, naysayers. You dealt with so many, like, people who were negative, people who laughed at you, made fun of you, and all of that stuff. And you made it till here. Go for it. Just see what you can achieve with it. You know? So I told myself, you know what? I'm going to start training again. And that was, like, I had, like, a 4 months period to kind of go from 0 to 100.
Wow.
4 months, you know? And I'm like, you know what? I can do my best. I used to train maybe, like, 7 to 8 sessions a week. And then I was doing 4 only for, like, about a couple of months. I wanted to have some strength back. And then by the time I come back to the UAE, like, about a month before the Olympic qualifiers, I can train really hard to achieve my peak. And that's what I did. So I started doing some strength training. And then my strength started coming back a little bit. And I eventually went back to the UAE. And I started training with the UAE national coach. And, like, I don't know, in 10 days, he got me to, like, squat 10 more kilos. Or more. Like, you know, he was such a, like, he just knew exactly how to train you and how to push you. And he knows, like, he could see, like, me, if I'm a bit, like, not as wobbly or whatever, he would, like, take some weights back and things like that. And and we reached the Olympic qualifiers, and I competed at the Olympic qualifiers, which is a huge event, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, I never dreamed in my life, like, you know, I would be part of something like that. Yeah. It was never even like in my imagination. And at first, we did not qualify. So there was some issues with athletes and doping and things like that. And 2 months in, we were told that we actually qualified to the Olympics just a month before the Olympics itself.
And
I personally did not compete in the Olympics. It was, we sent another female athlete to the Olympics, and her name is Aisha Labrouchi. And, you know, to be part of that event was huge, because the way I see it, we are all Olympians in that team.
Mm-hmm.
We were a team of seven girls from 13 years old to myself. I was the eldest. I was 26 at that time.
Okay.
And, you know, we all kind of competed in different weight categories. And we made sure, like, our coach made sure we don't compete in the same category, because if we're in the same weight category, we're competing against each other.
Yeah.
So I went to, like, category 69. Normally, I was 63. And so this time I was like a 69, I was 64 kilos at the time. But the goal was to make sure we play it, strategize and play it right, so that we can get enough points to qualify. So despite my injury, I still had the second highest points in the team that allowed us to qualify. And I believe I was also like first in the Arab region with that, with my total at the time. If you ask me what my numbers was, I probably will not remember now, because I don't care so much about those things anymore.
Yeah, right.
But it was such a big achievement for myself and for the country as well.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
And I believe that, you know, sometimes we go through these experiences not just for ourselves, but for others.
Mm.
And we don't realize it at the time. You know, like when I started my journey, it was about like me and my healing journey and like healing my depression, healing my anxiety, kind of getting fit, kind of getting mentally strong. But toward the end of it, you know, I realized my story was, it is truly bigger than myself. But I did not realize in what way or all of that stuff until later on.
Yeah.
And
I think often I look at my own personal experience, like if I get any kind of any family backlash or anything, it's more like they're concerned, you know, like my career decisions, like, oh, we want you, you know, they just want to make sure you're okay and that you're going to be fine.
We want the best for you.
Yeah. Did you see a kind of, I guess, a change, you know, when you were doing the Olympic trials within your family and other people who might have been, you know, concerned for you and now they're saying, okay, I get it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like my family eventually realized how much that journey changed me. And changed me as a person and made me calmer, because I used to be very angry. And they saw that it helped me like kind of come into like to myself and like calm down and learn how to manage my emotions better. And they saw that there was a shift in my personality. Like even like, you know, sport teaches you discipline, teaches you character, it teaches you determination, it teaches you like how to really manage your emotions, you know. And I believe that this is like a social aspect and like a self-development aspect of sports that is not talked about a lot. And especially in the region, we focus so much on the end result, on the performance aspect of it, that we neglect sometimes the journey of healing, journey of like self-discipline and all of
those
things.
Journey of finding yourself.
Exactly, exactly. And I believe like once there's more focus on both aspects of it, the sport culture can change immensely in the region.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you had to step away from competition because of the injury. Is that correct?
So I stepped away from competition. Like I decided to retire from competing altogether because the injury was a factor, but also I stopped caring about competing. So there is a sense of, I started to see competing as self-punishment. It's like, I'm trying to compete against myself, get like the, you know, award or the like finish first, second, third. There's a point where I realized all of that does not really matter to me anymore. Like it wasn't my system. I got it out. Now I realize it was no longer the path for me anymore.
I wasn't serving you.
Absolutely not. It stopped serving me. It stopped giving me any joy, any sense of fulfillment. And for me, I truly believe whatever I do in life, I want to bring me joy. And if it starts to bring me pain, then something is wrong. So if the scale is not balanced, if it's on one end, like where it's pain, then it's not worth it anymore. That's when I knew it was time for me to kind of, you know, step out of that train and change direction, hop on a different path, you know, kind of explore where my life would take me.
When did you realize then that being an advocate instead would be a better path for you moving forward?
I started to get invited to speak quite a bit around that time, around my after my competitive events and the Olympic journey and things like that. And then I remember after almost a lot of my events, somebody would come to me, either would write me an email or a message or like on social media. And I realized that, you know, my story is powerful. My story is creating change and it is affecting people in a positive way. If I continued competing, whatever, I'll still be very focused on me. I cannot give a lot of me when I'm competing to the world. You can't. Like, it's very selfish when you're an athlete. You're selfish. Selfish. Nobody can deny that. And if you deny that, then you're lying to yourself. You know, it's a very tough path. And you need to have really people who are very understanding around you and around that time. And I stopped seeing how me competing will benefit even myself. Because I saw, like, you know what? I have limitations. I'm not going to deny I have limitations. We always say, oh, there are no limits, blah, blah, blah. But the reality, there are still limitations we have to work with. I believe, okay, recognize your limitations, acknowledge them, and work with them. And I knew, like, I reached to where I could. And yes, if I push myself a bit more, maybe I could lift heavier weights. But that did not matter to me anymore. So I said to myself, Amna, you've learned a lot in your journey. You can take what you learned and pass it on to others because they can do it better. They can, train better. They can understand what is the steps to take to reach to that high level that could actually help them achieve better results, you know, things like that. So sometimes I think we go through things, not for us to continue going through them, but to take what we learned and the mistakes we went through and kind of help the next generation handle it in a better way.
But do you still live for the joy of it?
Oh, yes, I do. Of course, of course. Like my body loves lifting weights. I love weights. I don't lift heavy as much as I used to. And I have some, like, injuries that I'm still dealing with from many different things. I'm very still active. But I, whenever I feel like I want to do, like, clean and jerks, I would do them. Whenever I want to do heavy deadlifts, I do them. I still squat on a regular basis. I still go to the gym. I still do strength training. But I went back to my essence, which is I want my body to feel good. I want my
movement for the joy of it.
Yeah, I want my body to feel, you know, strong. I want my body to feel mobile. And that's it. And it's not about, like, expectation on how much I'm lifting or performance and all of that stuff.
Do you think you'd try any other sports?
I mean, I'm...
As someone who's taken up cycling in their late 30s, I'm like, you know...
Sports. I mean, I like activities. I'm learning drums, which I see it as a sport. It's very physical.
Yeah.
I'm using, like, both legs. I'm using both arms. Yeah. But on the, you know.
Surely there must be some type of drumming competitions, like, not just from, you know, from, like, the physicality of it.
Yeah. That'd be very interesting to see. I'm sure there is something out there. But in terms of sports, like, let's say basketball or whatever, like, I don't see myself really excited about, like, anything specific. I knew when I was in university, I used to, like, play, like, kind of shoot hoops and kind of things. But I just went to the shooting range the other day and I actually really loved it.
There you go.
So I'm like, maybe get into shooting.
Something. Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty good at it. So I was, like, pretty much, like, you know, hitting, like, almost bullseye area for the most part. So. Yeah. Might as well maybe take a shooting.
But you do a bit of hiking as well, right? Like, do you like that? Do you like being in the outdoors?
I love the outdoors so much.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, my hip injuries do not allow me to walk a lot anymore. Okay. So it can bother me if I walk more than, like, 1 hour and a half, 2 hours. It can become an issue.
Right.
Yeah. So if my body was, like, cooperating with me, then I would definitely be outdoors hiking and... Like, I love cycling. I love those things. I still do these things. I, you know, I've done, like, climbing as well. So I'm very into trying different activities. Like, I've done surfing. I've done, you know, all kind of activities just to kind of see what sticks and what does not stick and see what I like. Some things I like to do for fun and once in a while. And some things I like to keep doing because I find myself connecting with it.
I think that's so important, just trying everything. And that's kind of how I found my sport.
Yeah.
And just literally trying everything.
Yeah, yeah.
We were talking before about the Olympics, and I was like, oh, if I ever... what can I possibly go to the Olympics for now? And I'm like, maybe curling. Yeah. That was very skilled. I used to curl, by the way.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I'm thinking about it now. Maybe if I had started earlier and just seeing the progress I've made in the last few years, just from the dedication that I've given to the sports that I've picked up, maybe I could have been a, you know, kind of a runner or something of that nature. But yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. We also
but it takes a lot out of you. Like, it does. You know, well, that's sporting. It.
Like, like competitive, if you're doing it full time, competitive sports, as you said, it's you need to have a good support system around you. You need to have people who really understand what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you need to sleep at a certain time. You need to eat at a certain time. Yeah. Like, you can't go out and socialize at certain times. You're missing family engagements.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it does take a big chunk of support.
It does. And you have to, when you make that decision, you have to know that this is something that you really want to do. Mm-hmm. And you are willing to make some sacrifices, because you will be making sacrifices. So you have to weigh your options. And, but like, one of the things that I like to ask myself is, will I regret if I don't do this? Mm. Will I wonder what if I don't do this? And if I find myself answering yes immediately, then I definitely want to go and do it, because I don't want to wonder. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes wondering hurts more than knowing.
Yeah.
And I believe if you take that step to learn...
It haunts you.
It haunts you. Yeah, it does. It haunts you, because you always wonder, what if I did this? What if I did that?
Yeah.
You know, and it becomes a sense of like negative feel, like you're punishing yourself, you're, you know, it's a sense of shame, and it hurts, you know? And so you have to try and see what happens. Mm. And if you fail, fine, who cares, man? Like, at least you did something. At least you were brave enough to take that step.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. You know, oftentimes people feel like, some people that I know only want to get involved in a sport if they know they're going to be good at it. And I'm like, where's the fun in that? You know, like, or how are you going to be good right away? You need to, like, you know, battle through kind of that period where you're learning and stuff. Yeah. And I think, you know, to your point earlier, some of the more interesting stories are the people that never make the podium. Mm. You know, what is their story? Mm. What have they done to get here? What kind of things have they sacrificed or battled through, you know, to make it to this place? Mm. Yeah, it's really, really interesting. I guess on that point, too, it's looking back, you know, it's been 10 years now. And you said it was a very different... I think when someone mentions the 90s, I'm like, oh, that's not long ago. So it feels like, you know, 2011 was like literally like yesterday, but it's like, or 2012, it's literally 10 years ago. Yeah. Have you seen a big shift in the sporting culture here, you know, with Olympic weightlifting in particular? Like, what do you think's different now for, you know, young athletes who might have seen you first compete and wanted to be involved? What do you think's different now? And what more do we need to do?
That's a loaded question. You know, when it comes to Olympic weightlifting, I would say not much has changed.
Right.
It's still very much not underfunded. Still women are
Is it for women in particular, or for both. Just the industry?
Both. It's just in general as a sport. Mm. Even though we are one of the few sports that have sent two Olympic female athletes. Like, we've sent to the Olympics in London and in Rio. Mm. And you would think by having that, you know, achievement, there would be a bit more focus on the sport, because there is a chance to send more female athletes to the Olympics, especially in our region, you know, where we're still young, we're still growing. There is opportunity to send women to the Olympics, because the qualification process is different in some countries, and, you know, there's opportunity to kind of, you know, take advantage of that and create something powerful for the future. In general, I would say the fitness culture around women's sports or women activities have changed a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the Dubai Fitness Challenge, you have the government games. They're encouraging women, Emirati women, to compete and take part of these events. And it's done very publicly. So I think that's a great, great step forward. But I still think there needs to be more focus on creating something more progressive, in the sense that it's there's a bigger program, bigger goal, bigger, you know, kind of outcome for all of these events, other than just like, you know, people come and compete, they win some money, and that's it. So if you kind of keep putting that out there, you know, it will make it a bit more about, oh, I want to compete, win, make some money, and that's it. So it doesn't become about, you know, building your character. It doesn't come about like creating a shift in the sport, culture in the Middle East overall for women in sports encouraging. It becomes very materialistic. It becomes very focused on, you know, just me, and trans, like not so much the community at large. So I think, you know, fitness events are great, but they're still not contributing to something bigger in terms of shifting to a sport culture.
Interesting. What role do you think the media has to play in that?
Huge role, because they're not sharing the right stories, you know. And one of the things I wanted to talk about is, you know, for my journey and my story, the media took the narrative. They created a story out of my story that made it maybe more popular, more, you know, kind of like, help me with the word, I'm struggling with the word, kind of like...
Was attention grabbing, basically.
Yes, attention grabbing, like rebellious, about rebelling against the culture, things like that, you know. And that was definitely not at all my story, you know. When I reflect back on it, it was really a story of healing.
Yeah,
it was not a story of being first, about, you know, numbers, about like going to the Olympics. All of that is the outside. It's the, you know, the what we see.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, the inside is more about like the healing, creating that shift within myself. And that itself created a shift of its own outside. You know, and I think the media really can create harm, especially when they focus on like women clothing. You know, things like that. It's like, come on, yo, like, you're not talking about a guy and his tattoos.
Why are you sitting talking? We should be beyond this now,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, just sorry to interject, but do you remember I shared that article, what was it, Wimbledon?
In a publication here.
Yeah, I won't say
UAE.
A publication, but they were talking about how much jewelry she was wearing, Tiffany jewelry.
Yeah,
and
I mean, she made it to the lifestyle section. She didn't make it to the sports section.
I know,
section,
I'm like, why are we talking about this athlete in this context? Yeah. No guy, exactly. Like, you would never, ever see
that.
No,
they would always in the media talk about men and their hard work and how they reach because of their hard work. But for women, it's always about luck, or it's about like, either she had a lot of support or some, you know, they never focus on, you know, the woman herself and how she had to push through a lot of and break some
her
boundaries.
Journey, her actual journey.
Yeah, yeah. So it's you know, something that needs to be changed in the media. And it's our, you know, decision and choice to also kind of what we put out there and what we agree to and what we don't agree to. Like, if I find an article does not make sense to me, or like I'm getting an interview and it does not add any value, I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to do this, because what's the purpose of this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not creating any change. It's not putting my story in the right way, and it's not honoring myself.
It's about owning our voices.
Yeah. For sure. What projects do you have on now coming up, and how's the rest of the year going to shape up for you?
I have
any more children's books in this? There's a little known fact, or an unknown fact a little bit, that we need to talk about. I think Don was really curious about this one, I think.
You know, just for our listeners' context, we have a little questionnaire and we always ask if there's a little known fact. And
trying to be a bit
cheeky. Abner was a bit coy, so we're trying to draw it out of her now. Our little known
I don't know if I like feel like sharing anything right now, to be honest. Honestly, like, I like to take life as it comes right now. That's how I'm pursuing life. I don't like to say I'm going to do something. I only say something if it's been done. So I don't have anything specific I want to share at this point in time, but
just watch the space,
everyone.
Watch the space, we'll have her back, you know, talking about it. Maybe your career as a drummer.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, that could create a lot. I mean, honestly, when I started like playing the drums, I had no idea I could actually play. So, you know, and it took me obviously time to learn and things like that, but I'm amazed that I was able to actually play a full song on the drums.
I love it.
You know, like after learning for a year.
And who knows where that'll lead, you know? Yeah. Like what we were saying, like if you look back 10 years ago, would you imagine this is your journey?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, from here. And that's and to your point earlier, what you said about putting good intentions into the world, and I think that's so important. You know, the often say, like, the universe conspires, you know, to help you and along your way if you go with a pure heart.
Yeah.
You have the intention, you can do it for sure.
Yeah.
So being inspired by your journey, and I think a lot of people have, do you think that resilience and grit, can that be developed, or is it innate? Just from your journey.
From my journey. I think it's both, personally. I believe it's both. I think every person out there has innate sense of strength. Otherwise, we would not be born, in my opinion. Like, I truly believe you had to be really strong egg, you know, and all of that stuff
to fight it out,
it means like you were meant to come out, you know, you were meant to be here. And I think that itself is a starting strength for all of us to be here. And if you made it till this day, then you have that sense of resilience and grit inside of you. But I also think that sometimes you need to polish that strength. And that strength you have to take steps toward, and that you have to, you know, find ways to keep on going. And the thing is, with the word resilience, it's not a positive word. I personally don't believe it's a positive word, because it means we had to suffer through so much to kind of keep on going. And it's hard, you know, and you know, there's a lot of different, you know, I'm trying to be as mindful as possible, because there's an aspect of mental health and mental illness here in my, what I'm saying, an aspect of, you know, just everyday life and kind of pushing through everyday life. So it's different in different contexts, you know, and I cannot like give you a specific answer for this in a way that might be, let's say, considerate, maybe.
It's nuanced.
Yeah. So it's one of those like tricky kind of situations. But I believe that we all have strength within us and to, you know, be here. And we all need to keep on working to develop that strength. You know, it's like in the gym. You don't just get strong by going once. You have to keep on going. You don't get clean teeth by cleaning your teeth once. You have to clean your teeth every day. You don't reach where you are every single day by doing nothing. You still have to put on steps and things that. But take time to recover. Take time to rest. Again, like in weightlifting, you get strong when you're resting. You know, when you're at the gym, you're breaking down your muscles. When you go home and rest and eat, that's when you get strong. You go back, you can lift a bit more. That's how it is. It's a cycle. So it's something you have to keep working on. There is no, like, maybe there is no unconscious, maybe, strength that exists just like that. You know, I don't know. That's not the word I'm looking for. Maybe innate. I don't know. Yeah. I'm just like blabbing.
But I think also it's so important to kind of like forgive yourself and, you know, realize that at the end of the day, you will slip up and, you know, you can't really be strong all the time. No. There are times when you will be vulnerable and yeah, you have to take that into consideration as well.
Yeah, I love that. Rest is so important.
Yeah. We don't realize how much we need. Like after Olympic weightlifting, my Olympic weightlifting journey, I needed the same amount of time I've trained to rest. So the 4 years I put to just like go and do things, I needed the last 4 years to be as focused on recovery. Yeah, to focus on recovery and rest and just kind of rejuvenate and kind of find myself again. And I think that's okay, like to not always have an answer to questions or to things and how to, you know, go about your, you know, next thing or whatever. It's okay. Like, who cares? Like, it's just kind of give yourself that space to exist, you know?
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, I think, yeah, that's kind of it. Thank you so much. Thank a wonderful chat with you today.
Thank you. Thank you. It was really a pleasure. And I hope this, you know, podcast will give somebody a message that they can resonate with them, maybe do something with it, just something to kind of inspire them in a way that they need.
Thank you so much for listening today.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, we ask that you please share it with family, teammates, friends,
and even frenemies, or share via social media. Please also leave us a review wherever you're listening to this podcast. 5 stars only.
And visit us on themetalset.com for more stories and resources.
Thanks again for listening.
Your support means the world to us.
This is The Metal Set.